Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. This is broadcast number 552, and it's July the 5th, 1982. I asked you last week if you would contribute to membership to Kazoo. This is a listener-sponsored station. It's not commercial radio, and membership is $15 yearly, $10 if you're a senior or student, and a contribution of much more if you care to contribute to the station. We take a lot for granted every day, and I think that the outrage that was expressed at the possibility that I wasn't even going to be on the air was so overwhelming, with literally hundreds of calls for 10 days. So I would assume that some of you would show your appreciation to KAZU and send a check as soon as possible. Box 206, Pacific Grove, California, 93950. You can telephone a pledge, but send a letter, that's better. And another matter I want to bring up, that I offered my time at the suggestion of people at the station to have an afternoon, a Sunday afternoon, to answer questions. Many of you have questions on your mind, and I do answer the telephone and take calls, but week after week I throw out a lot of controversial information which is necessarily related to programs I did in the past, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. I'm constantly updating. And you catch it with the new news breaking and don't remember or didn't listen way back to get some of these connections. And while I'm giving these current news events, I don't always make the necessary connections to events that took place in the past. So on Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock at MPC at the Music Hall, for several hours we'll get together and I'll answer any questions you have, starting with your third question. And we'll go from there and see what it is you're interested in, or what particular subjects and what that I've talked about on the program interests you particularly. The first question always is, why don't the Kennedys do anything about the assassinations? The second is, how come you're still alive? So I always start with the third question. And we'll spend a Sunday afternoon. That'll be at MPC July 18th at 4 o'clock. And $5 will be the cost of admittance, and the money will go to KAZU. This will be on the tapes, even though these tapes go out of the city and to other states in the United States and out of the country. I still think it's pertinent for you to know what we're doing and that we must give back and share what we have with the station, and I hope you will do that. Now, this week, there were four suggestions this past week and a half of military coups, and I have a list of earlier coups attempted since Ronald Reagan was president of the United States. He's escalating the military intelligence, the CIA, the counterintelligence. So it's terribly important to watch the coups of the week or the past week and a half, and I haven't updated them. There was an attempted military coup that was squashed in Tehran, and of course we would like to get rid of Khomeini, and this was put down this past week. There was a murder, an alleged suicide, a gun went off of the president of the Dominican Republic. A new president is supposed to come in very shortly, but this one's gun just went over and hit him in the head when it fell on the floor, and he was the first president of the whole Caribbean to have been elected. A new successor is coming in. He was supposed to have come in of his own free will, and he went out flat on the floor in a coffin. Another attempt last week in Zimbabwe was Mugabe, who escaped assassination attempt. And, of course, the United States and South Africa have been trying to get a poke at him for a long time. And in Guatemala, the president is threatened all the time with a coup there. Mr. Mont, M-O-N-T-T, the president, a fellow, a devout Christian from California who's running Guatemala, feels that the military may even come in and somebody's farther right than him. So those were four just this past week and a half, and we'll update those about every 2 weeks. Now, the reason the coups are so important, terribly important, is that a lot of the problems going on in Washington right now between Alexander Haig and George Bush and Ronald Reagan are problems going back to attempted coups that have taken place since the President of the United States was inaugurated last year, a year and a half ago. The coup between George Bush and Alexander Haig when Ronald Reagan was supposed to die in March of 81. The mistake of having the Pope survive two assassination attempts, and this goes back to the CIA and Edwin Wilson in New York, who's safely in New York, and various agents of Navy intelligence and the CIA. The planned coup in Spain for the fascist dictatorship to get rid of the royal family and put in a Franco type of military dictatorship, which boomeranged and caused a lot of anxiety over the heads of the United States intelligence again, and then the murder of Sadat with Mubarak and Alexander Haig and George Bush. A lot of the turmoil and the dancing around of the heads of states right now fighting each other, I believe, has to do with control of the agencies after the goofs in Spain, in the Vatican, in the United States, and in Egypt. And many of the people involved in those attempted coups are speaking, wanting clemency, leaking out pieces of information. And the excuses for the dumping of Haig at this time and for the Bush people taking over has more to do with controlling what information comes out because of the failure of these particular attempts to put in fascist states not coming off the way it was planned originally. And there's a lot of leaking of information, and I've talked about these events in detail, but right now the characters are having problems with each other. Now, last week or several weeks ago, June 21st, I mentioned with Edwin Wilsenholm that he made deals to sacrifice several Chilean who were involved with the murder of Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt. Edwin Wilson came home with his $18 million that he picked up in Zurich. And one of the things I mentioned that he would be willing to set up Arafat and Gaddafi in exchange for his immunity. He's been saying, and Jack Anderson's been writing, that Edwin Wilson worked for the CIA and for Navy intelligence while he was overseas, arming the so-called leftist terrorists always funded by the CIA. The news this morning said that Gaddafi is urging the PLO to commit suicide. I guess he would be next when they go into Libya, then he'll commit suicide. But I saw a movie several years ago of Idi Amin with the suicide kamikaze troops trained again by the Central Intelligence Agency. So if they got into trouble or were apprehended, they would kill themselves off. So it's interesting that Gaddafi, who's a big mouth, who was going to do so much if anybody touched his country, is not sending in troops or airplanes or helping Arafat at all. He's telling them to commit suicide, which is pretty brave for him. And one of the problems that I mentioned several weeks ago is that in exchange for Edwin Wilson being home and getting off of charges, a la the Hinckley case, a similar kind of deal he's making, he's willing to sacrifice the people that he's armed to the hilt, because the game of the left-right terrorism has to be over. The CIA simply cannot fund what is supposed to be all these leftists going around the globe killing various persons in different countries, because every time they leave a piece of information, it always goes back to CIA and Navy intelligence. And with the scandals of the Munich Olympic Games being organized and funded by the CIA and not by the Arabs, and the killing of Jewish officials in London and Paris and American officials in those countries also linked to the same teams in the terrorist school set up in Libya by the intelligence community, and in Uganda and the torture equipment, just that area alone, I'm not talking about South America or Central America, the time has come to halt some of that madness. And because Israel has so much information that the United States has been behind this, that and many other countries, that every country sits back and watches Israel displace 1 million people or kill 12,000 and decimate the place and put Lebanon down to rubble, and nobody is raising a finger. Russia said this week they wouldn't do anything. Gaddafi won't do anything. Arafat, it seems, has no friends, and he's betrayed. The name of the game is loner. You go into this thing for what you can get out of it, and if you're up against the wall, you're on your own. The CIA has the same system. They have suicide kits that they're supposed to take in case they're captured, and you take the game for as far as you can. Therefore, the loyal friend of Arafat, Mr. Gaddafi, is saying, why don't you die? You know, commit suicide. I knew that the intent now was to surround Arafat and Gaddafi because there's too much coming out. Speaking of coming out, in this morning's San Francisco Chronicle and the New York Times, a large article, The Green Beret Unfolds Their Secret Life. Now, I said that when Frank Turple and George Corkula were arrested in December 1979, that this was one of the most important stories of my years of research. I'd done 9 years up to that time, 9 years on the air, that these men are behind the whole era, going back, Corkula, to the John Kennedy assassination, to the murders of Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Che Guevara, Malcolm X, Death Incorporated. If you take Edwin Wilson, Frank Turple, and George Corkula, or Gary Corkula. Well, the article this morning is by Philip Taubman in the New York Times, and in essence, this is what he's saying, in case you don't have this story. Luke Thompson is a man that worked with the Green Berets in U.S. Army intelligence, and he is speaking. And if you multiply the hundreds of people who have information, or even 20 or 30, they could really open up this whole era if they go properly to be investigated. Luke Thompson tells how he worked for military intelligence, and that the Green Berets and the military intelligence ran the U.S. foreign policy on a secret basis from 1962 to 1978. 62 was the year before John Kennedy was murdered, when Theodore Shackley came over from Germany, and Edwin Wilson and Helmut Stryker and various people from Hitler's Gestapo and Franco's regime organized the special forces for death squads to decimate and kill people all over the world. The New York Times story today is how these teams were set up from 1962 to 78, how they were a part of the U.S. foreign policy, which I have said on the air for years was happening. Mr. Thompson was recruited when he was 14 years old into the National Guard. Now, Lee Harvey Oswald was recruited with David Ferry into the Civil Air Patrol when he was just a teenager, 16 years old. Hitler used young men when they were 14 or 15. He pulled them into the Battle of Malmedy so they could later join the United States forces. Mr. Luke Thompson started when he was 14 years old and was admitted to the Green Forces Special Training in 1959 as a kid. And he worked with the CIA. Now, he tells how he went to Southeast Asia and how he was set up that the Special Forces, U.S. Army Intelligence, is nothing but a killing team, how they're trained to kill. He tells about attempted murders in Dominican Republic, another country where we had our covert action and CIA overthrow. He tells about killing Che Guevara, how they set up the murder of Che Guevara, the United States, and I could list, if we have time later, 40 countries where this has happened by the CIA and the Special Forces. He tells about his trips to Thailand and Laos and Cambodia, Vietnam, how he killed the first person and what it was like. He was on a special trip with him, and he just had to do it. He had orders. He says it's just as simple. It's just like brushing your teeth. It has to be done. He didn't dwell on the assassination of these people at all. In 1977, he's sent to military intelligence, to the Defense Department. He meets Edwin Wilson in Zurich, and his role then is to go to Libya to train terrorists, where they have a school for training. The United States military intelligence, with the Central Intelligence Agency, set up schools for making ammunition, for blowing up airplanes, and this is quite a long article about the explosives and how he worked for the Special Forces. And by June 1978, there was so much evidence coming out that these men worked for Army intelligence, Navy intelligence, and the CIA. They are the extension of our foreign policy. And the important thing is that there are training schools in Florida and Alabama and Colorado, in Texas and Mississippi for us. They don't just go over and kill. And as I said over and over, you see the movie Missing and you look at what happened in Chile, put yourself in the United States 5 years from now. These people are funded with your tax dollars. They're trained to kill. The Special Forces was set up in 1952. What they did in Southeast Asia is to begin the heroin and the cocaine, the narcotics market in the Middle East, the hashish and the opium and so forth coming in from Southeast Asia and the Middle East, the flooding of narcotics, and with the profit of that to buy weapons for people that had worked with Nazis from Germany who came over here and trained and set up our special forces for breaking up countries, for breaking up organizations, for killing particular political leaders, trying to kill Fidel Castro many times. But not only, he mentions Che Guevara, they got Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy. These people have been working a long time. And now, because Mr. Luke Thompson is talking about this, and Edwin Wilson is home, and Congress is supposed to be looking into this. If they were to follow this story, and I've said it many, many times, if they follow this story, they'll go right back to Dallas, Texas, when John Kennedy was murdered in 1963. There was another article this week on my favorite subject. You may have seen it on the newsstands, the National Examiner. Front page story, Adolf Hitler is alive, his master plan to foment chaos around the world. This has been one of my favorite subjects, and I call the Examiner. It's run by the Globe, and I've done many articles for them. Years ago, I did a lot of articles, and I called them this week about doing some more on the Hitler-Falkland story. Now, their source of information allegedly is a couple of psychics, but they are very well groomed into the information that's available about the Nazis in Argentina. And this article goes extensively into the fact of Joseph Mengele being with Adolf Hitler. They don't cite their documentation. If you want my programs on Hitler, Argentina, and the Falklands starting April the 11th, that was several months ago, the program 540, I did one on Alexander Haig, the Falklands, and the UFO, the Nazi secret weapons, with the source of books, one book in particular, the UFO Nazi secret weapons, the role of Admiral Byrd and James Forrestal, the Secretary of Defense, and our role building up Antarctica for World War III. Another good book I mentioned was Assault on Eternity by Leslie Rose, a new book on the military bases down there with the Nazis beginning and wanting World War III. Another reference I had on that series of tapes was Messengers of Deception by Jacques Vallée, who now works for Bechtel Corporation and for Mr. George Shultz, who's now our Secretary of State. The Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben. And there are many good articles in National Geographic, and I have the references here. The Police Gazette, January 1977, an entire issue, 60 pages on Hitler's escape route and how he got there. It used to be very funny to talk about this subject and cite books and chapters and so forth, but it's getting less hilarious, and while this tabloid doesn't have their sources, when you talk to the people down there, their office is in Florida now, they're not in Montreal anymore, they have plenty of savvy and they have a pretty good idea of what's going on, and they put it in general terms, but they want to break the shock value of what if he is there, or how would you handle it, and if you're standing in line at the Safeway and you're buying your groceries and peaches and you see Hitler is alive, will you do anything? And if you're told that that was Hitler in Switzerland or Argentina, how would you care? So the news is seeping out. It isn't documented, their story, but there's enough to document the fact that nobody ever had any bit of proof that Hitler died in the bunker. And there's a lot of proof by the dental charts and the very dentists who lied that Eva Braun didn't die there. And I've done many hours on the air about this subject. Another good article that I will do in detail in a few weeks, if I have the time, it's called Today the Falklands, Tomorrow Dash, Are the Southern Cone Nazis Planning Slave Labor in Antarctica? And that's one of the subjects I've brought up on the air for many, many weeks, is the use of Antarctica for batch consignments, for space stations, for mass migration, a continent as large as the United States plus Mexico that is 100% military. You can only go there and visit through military identification, and it's Antarctica is very, very controlled. It's harder to get there than into any single prison or institution in the world. Antarctica is a total military base. And this article came out in a magazine, a newspaper in New York called Overthrow, and they've got the map of the Nazi bases in Antarctica, the Nazi threat to world peace, and quotations from the National Geographic, and the role of the Nazis in Brazil and Paraguay, Bolivia, Argentina, Uruguay, and Chile since 1945, how the Third Reich has set up headquarters for a long time down there. It's a long, detailed article, and I will update and share some of this with you in case you can't get the magazine Overthrow. And if you write to me or call, I'll give you the address of where you can send for it. You can call New York. The area code is 212-533-5028 and ask for the July 1982 issue on Antarctica, slave labor, and Nazis down there. So that seeing that article on the newsstand in the Examiner reminded me that there is a lot of current material in addition to what I'm doing on the programs that is available for you that is coming out now. Also in the Examiner, there was a story on the front page and inside, Watergate conspirator Ehrlichman tells how I plotted Nixon's death. Now, he's telling how after the Watergate crisis came together and they were on Air Force One, that he planned to go in where the pilot was and fall between him and the switch and maybe end all of their problems. But as I mentioned June 14th on an anniversary program of Watergate, just several weeks ago, the Lewis Tagwood allegations were that John Ehrlichman and the plumbers and E. Howard Hunt were planning to kill Richard Nixon at the time of the conventions to make Spiro Agnew president. It's interesting that 10 years later, he's telling you of his plans to kill the president, But as yet, the established media and various newspapers will not research, because it is available. The facts are available of Squad 19 of the Los Angeles Police Department. The plans to kill Richard Nixon in San Diego, and then when the convention was moved, to do it in Miami. By then, the money that was linked to the Watergate people would be linked to the Nixon assassination, so they couldn't kill Richard Nixon. But that was the original plan. It was to get him out of the way, round up the radicals, blame the radicals for it, and make Spiro Agnew president of the United States. The same Los Angeles Police Department that was arranging Squad 19 with the CIA, with the FBI in Washington, D.C., and with people inside the White House, is the police department now who's being called to task because of the John Belushi murder. Several articles in the Los Angeles Herald Examiner, one an editorial, "The Belushi Death, the Move to Open a Closed Case is Long Overdue." I mentioned last week when I came on the air that the news account on the radio said that they were going to open up the case. The editorial, of all things, I don't know why they have to wait until an article comes out in the National Enquirer for people in Los Angeles to be able to even analyze or figure out that John Belushi's death was a cold-blooded murder with the assistance of the Los Angeles Police Department. Now the editorial and the Examiner says from the very beginning, it was obvious that the Los Angeles Police Department's investigation into the death of comedian John Belushi was flawed. Well, it's only obvious to me. I don't know of any other person in any news media that suggests that he was murdered. They said first there was the police report that they received that he died of natural causes. Then it seems there was a drug overdose. And then Kathy Evelyn Smith was with him and left the bungalow, and there were other people with him who were never contacted by the police just before he died. And the editorial goes into some of the facts, and one of the policemen in Los Angeles, Lieutenant Jim McMurray, simply saying in quotes, "It's just another fat junkie belly up." And letting those people involved in whoever supplied the drugs, who shot him, walking away without even a single question, even though this particular woman was on probation and could have been pulled in. She was allowed to bring the drug paraphernalia, spread it around the room, bring back a spoon and say that this is what he wanted, and she gave him what he wanted. Another article in the Herald Examiner last week, "Belushi probe reopens with a list of clues." Those of you who listen to this broadcast know that I had clues all over the place when he died. Now they say they want interviews with at least six people, including two celebrities. That's Robin Williams and De Niro. De Niro was in Taxi, the one that influenced John Hinckley, interesting enough. Miss Smith is now vacationing in Canada. That's where she had her broken ribs on the way up there and almost died. The hotel employees are being questioned, and the LAPD now are going into the evidence of where she was, where she got the drugs, did he know they were mixed, and why was he injected like 24 times, and he was dead, and she goes out and gets some coffee and makes some bets on horses and so forth. Another front-page story down in L.A., the DA wants new Belushi investigation. The truth is that the police department had the statistics on him, on the enlarged brain, on the physical condition of this man. I said at the time he would have to be poisoned. He had fresh needle marks. There was no evidence of scars before that he had these shots. That his heart, I mentioned this was back in March of this year, that his heart was 460 grams. A normal heart is usually 3 to 350, that his brain was 30% too large. The brain had just instantly blown up. His spleen was swollen three times the normal size. He was afraid he was going to die. She didn't call any person. And the first accounts were that he never shot heroin. There were no stories about his being a Hollywood junkie all over the place. His wife said that he hated needles and couldn't stand having needles. He was supposed to appear at the Academy Awards the next week and give presentations at the Academy Award. When they first had the body, they couldn't find any scars or needles. They thought maybe it was a heart attack. There were all these discrepancies about choking on food, and I mentioned it was probably like the Mama Cass or Jimi Hendrix vomit, you know, the poisoning in the food. They thought he had choked on food. The autopsy yielded no cause of death. 4 days later, The newspapers had no cause of death. The coroner said we have to do more tests, and they sent parts of the body to be checked out, and then they thought he had a heart attack. And then later, ABC TV says he was a drug addict, and then all of a sudden, after they look at the body, they can't see 24 needles, you know, that she injected in that one morning. The police had her. They let her go. They sent her on her way to Canada. They didn't want to touch the case. They wanted him dead, and I know why they want him dead. As I said before, the FBI doesn't appreciate him making movies about them dealing drugs down in Florida. I will do more on George Shultz in a little while, but these stories are important because they're the same Los Angeles policemen who covered up the murder of Robert Kennedy, Senator Robert Kennedy, that made Richard Nixon president, that brought us the whole Watergate problems to begin with, crook Nixon in office. The LAPD has worked close with Ronald Reagan and Paul Laxalt and Bobby Hall and the drug dealers, killing musicians and artists and drugging Howard Hughes and taking over the empire to really make the Nazification of America, to set up the assassination teams with Robert Mayhew. There was no Hughes after 66. He was never seen. But the LAPD and the Beverly Hills Police Department have done this to countless stars, to politicians, to public figures, inventors and scientists like Howard Hughes. Belushi isn't the first and he's not the last, but someday they're going to have to come to task. The Sheriff's Department, Peter Pitches, had set up the Manson family, the Sharon Tate murders. All of these I've done for years. So now, finally, they're being called to task on the John Belushi. If any one of these cases were opened up properly, and I'm sure they won't be, we would find out who's killed a lot more people than you think were natural deaths. You think they overdosed because they lived it high and liked the drugs. Knowing that they like drugs, you can give them drugs that are poison, such as Lenny Bruce, who was very political. The fact that he took heroin doesn't mean that everyone on heroin dies. The country and the world is filled with it. But when you get a political figure and he takes it, you give him a double whammy and then cremate the body, and you don't know what dose is even in him. It's not a normal dose. I'm going to take a break in about 30 seconds, and then we're going to get back onto some more of these other cases, and I hope some more. I'll get back to Bechtel Corporation and George Shultz, our new Secretary of State.